The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Ski. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and welcome to this edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot, and glad to have the pleasure of your company and thanking you for your support. Well, certainly one of the more entertaining skiers that we've seen this season in his first ever season of professional water skiing. He has a YouTube channel that is providing us with some great content over the last season or so, and he's been traveling around quite a bit. For those of you who don't know, he comes to us from Alaska, and his name is Carter Eaton. So, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Tony. Thanks for having me on here.
Not a problem. So let's kind of get down to it, because obviously there are a few people out there that that don't know Carter from Adam, you know. So I just want to try and fill in all of the knowledge gaps for those people who don't know the first central question: who is Carter Eaton, and where does he come from?
Well, I come from Anchorage, Alaska. I grew up skiing up there. And it was cold. I wore suits. I'm in San Diego right now, skiing Mission Bay with some friends down here that go to SDSU or graduated from SDSU. And this is actually where my dad learned to ski. So both my parents are from Alaska, and he came down here in college and got into skiing through the team. And so I grew up around it, just me and my buddy Gage and my dad and a few others that got hopelessly addicted. It was short seasons, but we really got after it and had a good community up there.
So, So you're kind of a true product of like the collegiate community, so to speak, as it were.
Yeah, I like to say I'm a second gen collegiate skier. Whenever I'm talking to people that are just learning in college, I like to tell them, hey, you know, my dad got to be a pretty good skier in his lifetime. And there's a lot of time after college, and, you know, your kids might be really good at this. So, the collegiate scene is great.
Because, I mean, obviously went back and saw if there were any results or anything from your teens and what have you, you know, and there isn't much there to go upon. So a true product of the collegiate scene going forwards. And as a matter of fact, you mentioned San Diego State University. That's it. That's exactly where you are right now, doing a little bit of off-season skiing, right?
Yeah, some surfing and some skiing on the bay, and we're making some fun videos over here, and it's been great.
Now, let's go a little bit of a deep dive in those videos, okay? So first of all, I mentioned right off the bat that you got a YouTube channel, and you've been filling it up with content. So kind of tell us a little bit about that, because the way that your YouTube channel kind of started a little bit, you know, it was a little rough around the edges, but it has certainly grown, and you've kind of had to rebrand yourself a little bit, considering how you get around the majority of tournaments these days.
Yeah, so I guess I'll back up a little further. I graduated last spring with an engineering degree, and I had a really cool job lined up with a startup company. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to do the tour thing. My best scores were, you know, FIBUs at 39. I wasn't quite there. I'm still getting there. But I kind of said, all right, you know, I want to go for this thing. I lost that job. I moved down to Arizona and I signed a lease. And then the job fell through, and I kind of was in this position of, you know, what do I do? And I said, all right, I'm going to go for it. And so I started this whole thing of, the ball got rolling, and I bought the van, and the plan wasn't originally to travel around in the van. And the videos were totally an afterthought. So I had a lot of filmmaking experience. That was my job all through college, and I was really into it. I mean, as long as I can remember. And so it was like 2 weeks before I was heading out to start the tour. A friend of mine said, she said it'd be really cool if you did some vlogs.
Yeah.
And if you made some videos. And so I started chewing on it, and I realized, you know, that is kind of this piece that fit in of I should do that. There's not really, you know, my cousins are into backcountry skiing, and every time I'm over at their house, they're playing, you know, in the downhill ski world and the surf world. There's all these cool, kind of just a different vibe from what we have, these edits and these cool videos. And I just felt like that doesn't quite exist. Like, there's some cool flow point videos and there's some really cool content out there, but I thought we were missing sort of this
kind of like the less serious side, more like lifestyle, but not like high intensity, like you see in a lot of places. Maybe one or two of those intense videos might have come from my general direction, but I mean, it's great that you've kind of occupied a little bit of that space, you know. So and like a lot of things, I mean, from what you're telling me right now, I mean, it was just like almost pure fluke and accident that you managed to get into it, and you seem to be reaping the rewards from it.
I mean, we'll see. I'm hoping to fund my next season through this channel, and that's certainly not when I started that. I just said, you know what, this is going to be fun, and I'll see what I can do. I like to look at the channel kind of going into it. I was like, I don't want it to be, you know, really egotistical, and I was like, I want seriously unserious. Mm-hmm. I want it to be really, really casual and fun, and sort of bring that energy. But you know, the channel's called It's Just Skiing, and that's sort of the mantra, right? But
that's about as understated as it gets, really. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, and it's part of it. It's ironic. Like, it's something I completely obsess about it. I dream about water skiing, and I'm so serious about it, and I get so worked up about it. And so it's a reminder for myself more than anything, but it's become this, seriously unserious. I want casual, and I want funny and approachable sort of way to display this sport. But then I also want it to look really, really cool. And, it's been fun trying to kind of create that, and a lot of positive feedback.
Yeah, an engineering graduate with a sense of irony. Who would have thought? Anyway, let's continue on a little bit, and we'll take a deep dive a little bit into It's Just Skiing. I'll put a link in the comments and the description for this podcast whenever it gets released. The release date for this podcast I'm slating to be towards the end of November, so it should be releasing by then. But what's your kind of turnaround with these videos? I mean, you seem to be editing them fairly slickly. You go with like the standalone and with the multiple frames and what have you, you know. I'm trying to think of something in my head, and it's just not there. But yeah, I mean, I've seen a couple of those videos. They looked very earthy, very down to earth, you know, and they got some good style associated with them, you know. So I mean, but let's talk about the van. I mean, because I mean, without the van, you wouldn't have the videos so much, and you certainly wouldn't be able to transport your way relatively cheaply across the country.
Yeah. So the van. So last fall, right, I lose that job, and I just went. You know, I did about 150 days of I lost the job and kind of didn't have a plan, and I was standing on the swim step that day and just went, like, oh my God, I could just do this. Like, there's nothing stopping me from chasing skiing right now, and I'm never going to have this opportunity again. I'm going to go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it was like, okay, first off, grind skiing. I was in the gym every day. I was antisocial. I think I did 170 sets in 100 days, and it was like 40 tournament rounds. I did my first two tour stops. I mean, it was just mayhem. And I knew, okay, I'm going to run out of money in about November. And I want to do this pro season. I'm not going to have any support. And so I need to make money this winter. And so I sold my car and bought that van. And
what
the original
car did
plan
you
I was going to. I had a Honda Civic.
Okay, so it wasn't exactly yeah. Top of the line.
It was a nice
Mustang.
Car. It was pretty new. I got good money for it. I pretty much traded it straight up for this van. It was an Enterprise rental fleet, empty van. And I pretty much got the van, traded it in, right? And so the plan was I was going to...
I never really thought about acquiring a van from like a rental firm. You know, I'm guessing they have to turn those things over at a rapid pace so that the customers can actually get something rather new to move offices and stuff. Anyway, I digress. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, so it was a good rig, and I thought, you know, no one's beating this thing up, and so I got the van, and my plan was actually I was going to ceramic coat cars for the winter. And so I started this business, and I mean, frankly, looking back on it, it's a slap in the face. It's hard to start a business. Mm-hmm. So I was fighting it, but that was my plan, is I'm going to ceramic coat cars all winter, and that's going to give me enough time to train. This is in Arizona. I was going to be done with Arizona, started the job. Just, you know, again, it's just this whole kind of crazy sequence of events that I just started running with, and everything fit into place, and here we are now. But so I wasn't ever going to live in the van. I just had it for this business. And then I got a call from the company that my job fell through, and they offered me a job for the winter. So actually this winter I was driving my van every day to downtown Phoenix. Like I was dressed to the nines, showing up for this kind of corporate job. And I was showing up in this van that was half built.
Yeah.
And I had enough time and freedom with that job I was going to the lake at 6 a.m. every day. I was going to the gym after work. And
oh, wow.
It was the most exhausting time of the hardest I've ever worked for anything, for sure. And didn't see friends. I didn't have weekends, but it let me train through the winter and get to a position that I felt like, okay, I'm ready to go do this tour thing. And So still not quite there. I kind of think, you know, you got to be getting pieces of 3 and 4 at 41. But getting through the winter and saying, you know, okay, I'm going to be able to run 39 at a bunch of these tournaments, and, you know, I'll be competitive and I'll learn a lot. And then it wasn't until March or April that I had the van. I said, well, you know, if I just did a few more things to this, if I had AC and if I spruce the bed up a little bit, and if I put a little more, I can just live in this van for the summer, and that's the cheapest way to go to these tournaments for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And,
absolutely.
I didn't know anybody in Florida. I didn't know anything about the pro scene. I got my van and I drove to Florida and I started skiing pro tour stops.
Nice, nice. So you got the van with the intention of running a business out of it, you know, in Arizona. Where specifically in Arizona? I mean, you said Phoenix, but I'm guessing the local ski scene is fairly close by, like Crystal Point and what have you. Yeah.
Yeah. So my folks got a lot on Santan when I was they had it when I was in college. I never skied there. I went to Firebird because it was 10 minutes away. But so I was living in Chandler, and I would drive like 45 minutes north to Phoenix to work. And then I would drive past my house in Chandler down south to Gilbert and get a ski set. And then I would drive back home. So I was driving like 2 hours a day to make it work. But I mean, when I say I was obsessed, like I woke up in the morning and the only thing it was like, all right, today's going to suck, but I get to ski. So it's
wow.
It was all for this kind of future journey. And this, it was a lot of sort of envisioning success and knowing that it's going to be worth it. And the skiing was, you know, what got me through it and what drove me to do it all. So, this morning we got up at 6 to go ski Mission Bay, and I was dragging my buddies out of their beds, and we got out there and went skiing, and we're like, it's so hard to do put all the work in, but then once you're out there, it's always worth it. So, I mean, that's really
Indeed.
been the story of my last year.
All right then. So you mentioned skiing at Firebird. I mean, you skied at one or two other places around the Phoenix area, but Firebird is a rather unusual spot to ski in, because I mean
Exactly.
that place is like pure salt water, isn't it? And you have to really, really take care of your stuff, otherwise that salt is going to eat away, right?
Oh yeah, it was pretty rough out there, but I don't know. I came and skied with the ASU team when I was a senior in high school, and I mean the lake is 10 minutes from campus, and it's not. I mean, East Coast is a 12-hour flight from home, and it's a 4-hour time change. Like Florida's closer to Europe than it is to Alaska. Like it's so far. I didn't want to go all the way down there, and so I went to ASU. And my buddy Gage went there the year before me, and I had some friends there already that I'd known for a while from West Coast skiing. And I just remember showing up and, I mean, had a good time with the crew. And then the next day, go to the lake 10 minutes away. And they're like, I think I skied like 4 or 5 sets that day. And just realized, like, I mean, this place is scrappy, it's salty, it's not ideal, it's a little rolly. But it's the same every day. It's sunny. It's perfect. So many sunny, glassy days at Firebird, and I just was like, "This is like the old scrappy Gold's Gym, right? That I can go to every day, and that I can improve." And the culture that we built there was really, I mean, really driven and focused, and it was cool. Kind of a Corey Vaughn might say, blue collar skiing.
You definitely give over that vibe a little bit whenever you started doing the first few Pro Tour events this season. So let's go into, well, before we go into a deeper dive into the actual pro season, I mean, how did you get to this point in skiing so far as your skill and your technical proficiency? Because I mean, getting into 39 and 41 sounds all blasé to a lot of people, but I mean, you had to go through certain steps to actually get to that point, and who was basically helping you train to that point, to where you can actually start getting deeper and reeling off these passes. I mean, in other words, who would you credit for a lot of your skill and your technical proficiency out in the water at this early stage?
My parents. So my mom doesn't ski, but she's a whack. She does all these marathon races, and she still plays hockey 3 4 days a week, and she's just got this really driven mindset, and kind of like, if you commit to something, you can do it. And then my dad, of course, is into skiing and is really a student of the sport. And so I grew up with this kind of, we didn't have coaching up there. My dad's a great skier. By the time we got to learn together, and he's gotten through 38 off a few times, never in tournament, but he got to be a pretty damn good skier. And so we were just, I mean, we were up there learning together. And my buddy Gage as well, who just won US Nationals for the first time, is a fantastic skier. We were just up there figuring it out. And so we had this really weird, like for example, at the beginning of the year, our course where we skied was too far north, so it would be frozen in the beginning of the year. And so we had like 3 weeks where we would go throw our boat in, and I would put the rope to 38 and do 100 gates. And just this really sort of FAFO approach, and watching videos. And I would watch Edge Dumwater, every time before I skied, and just watching them and trying to replicate, and being in this really kind of
Todd
learning and
Rustaselli's gonna
feeling
love
environment.
that.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. And I've run into Todd, over the last year and told him that. But yeah, it was this. I've always, I think I've, me and Gage and my dad, I think we look at the sport a little bit differently. Just being in this, we were so secluded, and we didn't have access. I mean, there's no coaches up there, there's no tournaments, and so it was just kind of this you know, learning and watching each other and coaching each other.
Kind of like fake it until you make it type deal.
Yeah. Just, I mean, just so obsessive because the season, I mean, we would ski from the ice would go out usually sometime in May and it would freeze up again in October. And it was just, it was this thing that we got to do in the summer that was really special because of that. And I mean, I never even had a hint of burnout my entire growing up because we were just going as hard as we possibly could. Didn't matter if it was raining, didn't matter if it was windy or cold or whatever, because if there was water, we were skiing. And it was, you know, go every time, go all the time and obsess and see how good you can get in those 3 months. And I think that, you know, once I got into a situation that I had access and could ski every day all year, you know, it didn't go away. Mm-hmm. And just had this really, I talked to some skiers that, and I'm not knocking them, this is just where they come from, but some of the skiers that maybe grew up with the coaches, you watch them trying to coach like a beginner, and it's almost like they don't fully understand how they do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where we come from, it's like I understand every little piece of it. And I know
because you've been
I know
there.
My problems because we had to figure it out on our own, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And looking back, it made me go down these paths trying to fix stuff in my skiing that was just totally wrong. And having done that, it's you know, I'm a better skier because of it, I think. Rather than just being told, you know, here's how it works. But that's also actually got me into trouble because I like to have these conversations of, you know, okay, what's the right way? And you know, I like to poke holes in people's theories, and sometimes that gets me into trouble. But I'm always kind of coming at it from this learning perspective, and I've had it come off not that way, and kind of, ooh, I need to pull that back, actually.
Wow. I tell you what, from what I'm listening, you know, I mean, life would be pretty dull if you didn't have any unchallenged opinions going down the road, you know. But I identify a little bit with what you've just described up in Alaska, except that my experience was in the opposite direction when I was learning how to ski and do what have you. In the early part of the 80s, this was in Abu Dhabi, which is in the United Arab Emirates, you know, and I was on a saltwater canal. The buoys were inflated so high, I mean, it basically broke up above my knees, you know, and I was trying to run like 22 and 28 off, you know, in bumpy water, you know, and it was pretty rough at times, you know, but it gave me an understanding of you know, the kind of the effort that you put in and in trying to make it, you know, and I think it definitely makes one a better skier, as you alluded to just a few moments ago.
Yeah, and I think really the biggest thing, the sport is so mental, and being able to train every day and being able to, I mean, this pro season, frankly, I mean, I got beat up the entire time. It was a hard season. But I think coming from that, you know, whatever you want to call it, but I think it gives you a respect for a respect and an appreciation and a gratitude for, I mean, how cool these places are. And, you know, I would have a bad tournament and just go, well, I mean, today I got to water ski in France at a really cool lake. And so maybe I went inside one ball, but I mean, we got to be grateful for that. And I think coming from just a little bit more restrained ski background, I think it drills that in pretty deep, and I don't see it going away.
Yeah, and it seems like we're gonna go into a deep dive of the season. The tournament that you're referring to, of course, was the Monaco tournament. I think that wasn't that your first pro tournament outside of the United States, or one of the first? I'm not too sure.
Yeah, so I had done MUBA, and I actually have a great story from Monaco that I want to tell. So
oh, please do.
I did Lake 38. And I had a good round. I got one at 41. And then it was me and I think Settlemyer on the dock. And it was whichever one of us wins round two, we're going to the final, is what it came down to. And I got 3.5 and he got 4. Anyways, so I came into Monaco with a better pro ranking than Will and Nate. And these guys are my heroes, right? So, I mean, I grew up watching them and emulating them. And so I have my buddy from Alaska there, and we grew up playing hockey where you talk a lot of smack, and it's kind of this, it's funny. And so we're looking at the running order, and it's me and then Will and then Nate, or maybe Nate and then Will. And so he was like, dude, you can't be intimidated. Like, you got to go onto that dock and talk some smack. And so we're laughing about it. And so I walk up on the dock with Will and Nate, and I've met them before, you know, certainly don't know them that well. And I walked up on the dock, and I was like, no way. You guys are still going 36? Like, I thought you'd have slowed down by now. I mean, I'm calling him old, and I'm like, yeah, like, great to share the dock with you guys. And Will just looks at, I mean, Will is, they're laughing, right? They think it's, but Will just looks at me stone cold, and he just goes, yeah, we'll see if you're on the dock with us next round. And I wasn't nervous. I mean, I'm coming off a great weekend. I'm in Europe for the first time. I'm having a blast, and I felt great, and I went out and sliced right through my gates and stood up. I'm feeling great. You know, nerves are gone. And I just skied inside one ball and went out the front, going across the wakes, and got a 0.
Ouch.
And I come back, and a few of the guys were like, all right, buddy, welcome to the pro tour. So that's my Monaco story.
Yeah, kind of big old reality check right there and then.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah.
Okay, so after that experience in Monaco, you said you had a story or two from Moomba prior to that, or was that just
yeah? So that's funny too, actually. So we went to Collegiate Worlds in Auckland, mm-hmm. which I was really excited about because it got canceled because of COVID my first year when I was in school, and then it got canceled because of the war in Ukraine when it was supposed to be in Belarus.
Yeah.
And so when I found out that I still had eligibility, I was floored. I'm like, here we go. It was right next to Moomba. And so I said, all right, I'm doing every event this year. I'm going to start out at Moomba. So we went to New Zealand, and then we flew over to Moomba. And I had, I think it was 8 or 9 friends from the SDSU team called us a couple months before and just said, hey, can we come to Moomba? And we're like, sure. So we're staying in the Airbnb with 11 or 12 people, and they all just came to hang out and watch. And then I skied Moomba, and it was maybe a little bit distracting, but it was a blast just having all those guys there.
Indeed. I mean, when you build up those kind of friendships and stuff like that, you know, I mean, you definitely appreciate the support of every single one there that made it to the trip, you know? So, I mean, how was your actual performance there in Moomba, you know? Because it seems to me from the kind of vibe that you're creating, you know, you're a tough, uncompromising athlete out there. But Moomba does have the habit of chewing you up and spitting you out if you're not prepared for it.
Yeah. So I had done it once before. But man, I love Moomba because it's rough and it's not perfect and there's a crowd. And I just, when everything's perfect, I find something to fret about and I get nervous and I, you know, like at just these last couple tour stops in Florida, it's so perfect. I find some way to freak out. But going to Moomba, it's like you can't help but laugh on the dock when you see, you know, a stick in the water floating by you at 5 miles an hour, and there's a crowd there, and I just feed off that energy, and I love it. And Moomba was tough this year because I did 4:38 in the first round, and I ended up top seed in the LCQs, so I just missed the free ticket to the final. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning I woke up, or that night, just with an awful fever, and I was throwing up all night, didn't sleep at all. I got so sick. And so the next day, I mean, I walked, our Airbnb was maybe a half mile from the starting dock, and I'm walking to my round with, you know, so it's like I need to get top 2 out of these I think it was 8 or 12 guys in the LCQ.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I was thrown up on the way to the dock. One of the guys there is like, "Hey, are you good?" I mean, I was in such rough shape and nobody was running 35. And then the two guys before me, one of them was Nick Adams. I don't remember that, but they both got 4:38. So it's like, all right, you know, I got to do it again. Right, if I get four, on. I go. And I skied just 2 inches inside it. And was felt so, I mean, I was so sick. After I skied, I went home and slept for 12 hours and just, I was so upset. But that was, you know, it was fuel to the fire. And that was early in the season. And I think when you get that close, you know, when the margin's like that, I think then you go back to training and you're in the gym and it's like, okay, well, that's, you know, it's a game of inches. And so it's going to be find those inches every day. One more rep, one more pass, one more set. And I think it can be good over the course of an entire season. It's damaging for sure. But at the time, I think it was actually good for me.
All right, let's talk about the remaining portions of the season. You know, so you done Moomba, you done Monaco. So what was your next tournament after that, and how did that go?
Well, so after Monaco, I didn't qualify for Morocco. And the buddy that was down there with me flew home. And so I'm alone in Europe. I've never been there. And I just hopped on the IWWF website and looked for a tournament. And I ended up going to this, it's called the No Wave Slalom Cup in Austria.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went to this random tournament. But, I mean, I had a ski bag, a duffel, and a backpack. And I didn't have, the only thing I booked before Europe were the tournaments themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so week to week, I would ski the event and then go home and book I was staying in these ratty Airbnbs. I was just trying to do it as cheap as possible. I was taking trains everywhere and just dragging that ski bag everywhere.
Oh, don't knock the train. Absolutely not. I mean, for those of you that are listening, you know, I mean, I try to train it as much as possible. You know, I mean, you can...
You know, I'm not knocking the train, but with a ski bag and it's in a language I don't know, it was pretty stressful. So... I bet I walked a marathon this year with that ski bag.
Oh,
I mean,
I bet
you did. I was dragging it miles and miles, working on my French, and yeah.
So that tournament in Austria, how did that work out?
It was kind of a backyard, but you know what? I really liked the people there, and I really liked Austria. But it was an 8-buoy course, and it was a little rolly. I just wanted to get some sets in. So I took like 4 or 5 practice rides, and then it was a 4-round tournament. And I just wanted to kind of find my feet, right? This is after I mopped the weekend before, and I'm about to have 4 weekends in a row of pro events. And so I just, you know, went and got some sets in and kind of got comfortable. And
So that 8-buoy slalom course, that wouldn't be at the IWWC, the International Wiener Wasserski Club, yeah, right outside of Vienna, right?
I actually don't even remember the name of the lake, but the tournament was called the No Wave Slalom Cup.
No Wave Slalom Cup. Okay, I'll do my research on that.
It was not where Nicky Atkinson skis.
That's what I was confusing it with, you know, because they have an 8-buoy slalom course there too.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so it wasn't there, but it was in the woods. It was real quiet out there. It kind of reminded me at home, and it was great mentally. Just to go ski a, you know, no stakes tournament and kind of find my feet. And then from there, we went to, I think, back to France for Funglis.
Okay. That's always an intriguing competition. Tell us more about that.
Yeah. That lake is incredible. I mean, it's just perfect. But I was staying in a little Airbnb. I didn't have a rental. I ended up getting a Turo rental car. It was like a baby blue convertible Fiat 500. And my ski bag, like, I wasn't sure if the ski bag would fit. And it was touching the tailgate and touching the dash. I had to take a seat out, but it fit and I had it. And I was staying in this ruddy little Airbnb. No one in Macon speaks English. So I was having to pull up the sophomore high school French lessons and
or Google Translate on your phone.
Yeah. And that's really, I mean, that's the story of my whole tour is, I don't want to paint it like it was a bad time because it was a blast, but solitude and confusion. I was alone for most of it, and I didn't know what was going on for all of it. And it wasn't until the late end of the season that I really felt like, okay, I found my feet here, and I know what I'm doing, and I'm making friends too. And but yeah, it was a lot of time just dealing with, especially in Europe, dealing with random problems and trying to get places. It was wild.
It sounds like that the road on the water ski pro tour in Europe was a little rough on you, buddy. At least no, but I mean, it breeds you to be a little bit tougher going forward, I would imagine. So after Funglis, well, first of all, how did you do in Funglis so far as that tournament is concerned, and then what were the next ones after that?
Yeah, so at Funglis, I got 2 at 41, and
that will open some eyes.
Yeah, I got 9th or 10th. I just missed the final there. I think JT got 2 the first round, and then 1.5 at 41 the second round, and I didn't run 39 the second round. So that was another one. It was like, God, I didn't even need to do better. I just needed to do the same score again. And at the top level, the consistency that those guys put out is what's most impressive to me. I mean, you're flying to a new country, and I mean, granted, they've skied these lakes before. For me, it was show up, brand new site, new country, everything, and try to figure it out in the 2 days before the next stop. But yeah, so that one was pretty good. And then we went to Spain for Botas.
Yeah, that's always a high intensity one.
Yeah, and I just couldn't really find my feet at that lake the whole week. It's a really cool sight, but that's just the way it goes. Sometimes I was struggling, and I had a decent first. I fought 39 first round, like a 2-ball. And then I ate a pesto between first and second round, and I'm allergic to nuts. And I had checked the label, but it's in Spanish. And so I guess I missed something on there. So I had an allergic reaction and probably should have gone to the hospital. Instead, I drove back to the hotel and took a couple Benadryl and grabbed my EpiPen. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm not going to die. So I had a couple Benadryl, and I come back to the lake, and it makes you so groggy. And so I'm a complete mess, and fell 38 my second round.
Ugh.
And oh, my God, that one hurt. So upsetting.
Okay.
Pick the eyes up, and all right, we got this next week. And I think after that was Italy.
San Gervasio.
San Gervasio. And that was a great tournament for me.
Yeah.
I tied Chris Parrish both rounds at that tournament. That was super fun because, again, he's, one of my idols. And so it was fun. Ended on a good note anyways.
Yeah, I mean, what's the expression? Never meet your heroes or that kind of stuff. I mean, but I mean, it's you can't avoid it. I mean, in those types of situations, And I do remember skiing, seeing you ski in San Gervasio and getting the full pro tour treatment, including the Friday night dinner type deal where I get to introduce all the skiers.
Yeah,
that's always a fun part of my job, especially when I get to introduce someone from the final from the last frontier type deal. Yeah. I bet you never get tired of listening to that, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm proud of where I came from, and I love to hear it. And the other cool thing about that, my mom came for that tournament. And so she's a travel buff, and she's always wanted to go places. And, I've dragged her to California and Wisconsin or, wherever Nationals is. And I always kind of told her, someday we're going to go to Europe and, Australia and these really cool places. And so I, early kind of when I was starting the Europe tour, she was like, which one can I come to? And I said, I think it'd be really fun if you came to Italy for the last one. Mm-hmm. And it was cool, right? Because the whole intro experience and, kind of told myself on that one, I'm like, this is we've got a lot to be grateful for at this one, and we're wrapping this tour up. And I mean, I was so beat up and just mentally exhausted, and had my mama there and said, all right, this one's for her, and put up a good round, and it was really great.
All right, then. So you ski pretty well, as far as I recall. I don't think you made it into the head-to-head, but I think you skied close enough to turn some heads and be in consideration for it anyway.
Yeah, I got up there. I had a lot of close this year, and that was one of them. Mm-hmm.
Yep, and but you know, I mean, there'll come a time when those close finishes will just suddenly become, you know, like high place finishes, you know, with a little bit more experience in on the water ski pro tour under your belt. So I would imagine from Italy, you flew back to the United States, and I'm guessing the Nationals would have been about the next one, right?
Yeah, so I actually flew. I was looking at flights home because my van was in Florida. I put it in a little storage deal. And I was looking at flights home, and I found out you could just fly. It's an 8-hour flight from Frankfurt to Alaska over the North Pole.
Oh, wow.
And so I flew home. I flew straight home to Alaska from Europe, and I spent a month up there and skied and hiked and fished. And that was just amazing for my mental health and see all the buddies and have an opportunity to find my feet on the ski again.
I'm so glad that you got back to Alaska on before the end of the podcast. I mean, I got a few more minutes, but I mean, everyone has this kind of like romanticized notion of what Alaska is all about. They've seen like, I don't know. I mean, the Discovery Travel might just as well just like gather their complete studio and move it on all the way up to Alaska and just plonk it there for between now and all eternity, you know, with like Deadliest Catch and Ice Road Truckers and whatever else they conjure up, you know. But I mean, but the reality of living in somewhere like that, I mean, is the perception given off by those shows accurate, or is there still some stuff that we need to know about Alaska before we have all of these notions?
I won't get too poetic about it, but it is every bit as magical and special as it's made out to be. It's a hard place to live, and you deal with a lot of problems, and there's long dark winters. But I mean, it is. I'm going there here in a few weeks, and I'll be home for the winter. I'm going to take a break from water skiing, and I'm just so excited to be in the mountains and play hockey, and I need that long dark winter. So,
what's it like skiing at 11 p.m. at night in the daytime at the summer?
It's super cool. It's pretty easy to be skiing out there and hanging out, and you check the time, and it's like 9:45, and you go, oh crap. We got to make dinner. we set a rule a few years ago. We're like, all right, we're not going to ski after 10 p.m. Because it's a public lake, and there's maybe, it's a few miles long, and there's 60, 70 cabins on it. It's public, but it's pretty quiet, and there's no public launch. But we try to, you could ski at midnight, you could ski at 1, you could ski at 2. I mean, it really doesn't, if it's clear, it really doesn't get dark enough that you couldn't ski. But just out of respecting our neighbors, we kind of keep it before 10.
Yeah, indeed, so. Indeed. I mean, like the whole wildlife, you know, in the outdoors, I mean, is definitely on top of many people's minds whenever they live in Alaska, you know. So you gotta respect your neighbors type deal, and a fair play to that. But after skiing in Alaska, you went to the U.S. Nationals. How did you fare in that?
I got 5 of 39. It was a fun tournament. The cool part was watching my buddy Gage take his first title. So, I mean, now both the Alaskan boys have won that tournament, and he's going to scoot up to open. He actually won jump as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was cool and getting to see everybody and meet. And then from there, we went, I did a couple weeks at home, and then California Pro. And then I was back in the van for, I think I've been on the road for 8 weeks, went back to Florida and got back in there and did Mastercraft Pro.
Tell us about Mastercraft Pro, because Mastercraft Pro wasn't exactly, didn't exactly work out for you too hot. I saw one of the latest videos that you posted up onto your YouTube channel, and you go into a little bit of depth on that one. But for the folks that are not in the know, tell us about what happened there.
Yeah, basically, I was using the Vapor boot with the Reflex system, which is, I mean, my favorite. I love that combo because that boot is so comfortable, but I feel like I want to release. I want to be able to come off the ski and I want to be hard shell, like a downhill ski boot. And so that boot is just, it's best of both worlds. But so I had gotten a brand new boot and a new release while I was home in Alaska, and I set the release up on the basically one hole too far back. And I mean, I had skied 100 sets on it before that tournament, and that was just the day that it slipped out. And so after that, I scooted it forward, and it's fine now. But I mean, that was so frustrating because again, that's a day I felt awesome that round. The nerves were gone, and I was just in a great place mentally, and I was ready to throw it down and go around some buoys, and didn't quite go that way.
Almost
So.
as frustrating as rocking on up to performance ski and surf one day and finding it not open.
Yeah.
Yeah,
They
I
open like
watched
15 minutes after me.
I watched the videos.
Right on. Yeah. No, it's a good one. But yeah, after that, I went to Travers, and I mean, this whole time I'm staying in Walmart parking lots. I'm going to LA Fitness to shower in the morning.
Oh,
Like
wow.
I'm
Oh,
living off the
you've
land
got
out
a
west.
membership, I trust.
So I do. Yeah, I
Okay,
spend a lot of time there.
let's not encourage people to shower in strange places if you haven't already paid for the privilege. But anyway,
Yeah. And
now
you cannot sleep in their parking lot in case you're thinking about doing that.
okay,
They will kick you out.
that's a top tip. That's a top tip right there. But
Yeah.
Travers Grand Prix, I think you basically got the notice of a few people there with your Patrice Martin escapade out there on the
Yeah.
slalom course around that fourth buoy at what was that like 39 and a half off, I believe that was.
Well, so the funniest thing, like it was at 38,
Oh yeah, it
and
was. Yeah, right.
so the rest of the weekend, everyone's like, dude, that 38 was crazy. And I never said it, but I'm thinking like, yeah, I ran 39 after that. Like, I don't know if anyone saw that. Like, it was just everyone's talking about the 38. But it was, I mean, I've never had that happen in practice. I was just but I was in a really good place mentally, and I was going with the flow, and I felt the ski kick out, but I just kind of hung on. And yeah, I mean, you know how I ski. It's scrappy, get the job done. Like, we're here to go around as many buoys as we can, and it doesn't matter how. So that was certainly my how I was skiing that day, and it felt good to end on a good note. I was definitely, I talked earlier about, Moomba fired me up getting close and not making it, but for that tournament, I needed a good round. And so ending the tournament just on a strong note, remembering how fun it is to put up a score at an event like that, it got me fired up for next season. And I think it's going to make this winter and my all the sacrifices to come, I think they'll be a little easier.
Yes,
So.
indeed, and you certainly know how to work your way through a podcast. I can tell you, because we're at the end of the season now. I mean, you've gone through Travers and all of those tournaments. Before we put Travers to bed, what were you like with the go-karting and shooting? I trust that you can handle a firearm, given where you come from.
There was a lot of, I mean, I said it on one of the interviews, but like, by Alaska standards, I am no means an outdoorsman. I like to fish. I've never hunted. Like, I've spent time with guns, but everyone's like, oh, the Alaskan. And I shot 8 out of 10. I think I did my home state proud enough. And then I thought I was going to be better at the go-karts. I did kind of middle of the pack. And I mean, that tournament's a blast. I really like the pro-ams. I think it's a fun, I think it's, I like it better when it's, amateurs on Friday and then the pro event on Saturday. But that tournament having the mix, it was different, and I thought that was really cool. And it just gets everybody involved, and it also lets the amateurs beat the pros
Yeah.
at shooting and go-karting, and I thought that was really cool too.
Yep.
All right, but you can ski, pal, but can you hold a gun?
Yeah, exactly. There, just to prove that we're all human, you know, and in one sense or another. Okay, so I mean, as we round off this this podcast a little bit, I mean, given all of your experiences this season, I mean, you've obviously had a blast. What have you known as your main takeaways from this season? How you'd applied that going into the upcoming 2026 season?
A big piece of it, I trained so hard, and I think I was certainly physically, I peaked pretty early in the season, and just realizing what a endurance battle this tour is. And I mean, just whole new respect for these guys that have done this for 20 years. How, I mean, it is so difficult mentally to pick yourself up every week and give it your everything, and then do it again the next week and the next week and the next week. And so I think next year I might slow down a little bit coming into the actual season. I'm taking this winter off. I think that will be big for me. But I mean, I skied pretty much till Christmas last year and went home for a week and then went back to Arizona. And I'm like, no, I need a winter. I need an off season. I didn't give that to myself. And I was starting to burn out a little bit at the end of the season. Not of skiing, but of tournaments. And so, that's my big takeaway. And here in a few weeks, I'm going to go home and try not to think about water skiing for 12 weeks and get some snow and rest and spend some time in the gym. So I think that's the biggest lesson and the biggest change that I'm going to make.
Learning a little bit of Spanish to at least make sure that that you don't consume any potential allergens that would make you make you sick, unfortunately. But it's a learning experience. So when the day is done, you know. So I mean. But so good to have had the opportunity to talk to you a little bit here. And before we round off this episode of the TWBC podcast, some final words and some acknowledgements and thanks. What would you like to say in that regard?
Thanks for having me. Like I've never done a podcast, and it's fun to kind of tell the whole story. You get bits and pieces of it watching the channel. But I guess like the big message here is that, that serious, unserious and trusting the process and sort of what it's turned into is this campaign to, alter the culture of this sport and to make it inclusive and fun and maybe a little more laid back. And, you know, there's kind of this rift between people who are doing the sport for enjoyment, people who are doing the sport for, you know, tournament skiing. And a lot of times I ski with those people that are just doing it for fun. And I think this is probably actually the way to do it. Mm-hmm. And this is the way to trust the process. And when you're enjoying it and you're finding fun, you know, you need to be able to go out and miss 5 passes in a row and say, hey, that gate on the third one was nice. And so that's sort of the message here is, you know, let's be grateful and let's enjoy this and let's share it, you know, as many ways as we can.
And this podcast will actually go out around about the time of Thanksgiving. So a very nice segue there, as it were. So this concludes this edition of the TWBC podcast. My name is Tony Lightfoot. We've been talking with Carter Eaton. And until the next episode, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.